This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Wednesday, November the 18th, lovingly curated as ever by Shruti Rajendran. Morning, Shruti.
Morning.
So, coming up, we are going to be talking aviation, aren't we? For a couple of reasons. Partly because I got up ridiculously early this morning to do a Zoom call with one of the senior guys at Boeing. Mm. They're still bullish about the outlook for selling planes over the next 20 years, not the next 20 days, but the next 20 years they are. But also from Seattle, bizarrely, Bill Gates put the cat among the pigeons, didn't he? Because he was speaking at a conference, not to us. And what was he had to say about business travel? 50% of it ever coming back?
Yeah, he thinks 50% of business travel will not return post-pandemic, which has obviously divided our audience reaction, because some say it will, some say they don't. You know, I mean, 74% was our Twitter poll, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a Twitter poll. 74% think that business travel will bounce back, but that's, 26% think that a lot of it won't. Big implications for a city like Dubai, which is built on business travel in many ways.
Yes.
So we've got that discussion to come. We'll hear the full interview with the guys from Boeing as well, Darren Hulst. That was a fascinating conversation. The other thing we've been talking about is TESS, the Targeted Economic Support Scheme from the UAE Central Bank. And we've been speaking to the chief executive of a bank, Peter England at Rack Bank, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And very insightful details on what exactly the banks are using the money for. And, you know, Peter England mentioned about deferred payments. And we did ask him who is benefiting from the money that we get from the central bank.
And he has the answers for all of those questions. All very important stuff. Aviation, critical industry sector here in Dubai. Banking, the economic support scheme, good, solid business breakfast stuff. But all pales into insignificance compared to Narendra Modi's beard.
Beard gate.
So this is the, we'll hear this in a few moments' time, our international pick of the papers, which we do early on the show, about 20 past six in the morning. Mine was a headline from the Times of India this morning. Narendra Modi calls Joe Biden to congratulate him and cement ties, blah, 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 which is fine. But it was the picture in the Times of India of Modi, and he looks like David Letterman with his huge Santa Claus beard.
Yes. But let's not ruin it anymore. I think we need to let people listen to what it is, because it's a fascinating conversation.
It is indeed. All that to come. First up, though, the grown-up in the room, Serena Kelly, has the news.
Ask Serena.
With Fragoman, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
And we have Serena Kelly fresh off a press conference.
Indeed we do.
How was it for you?
It was pretty good. A lot of announcements, which we'll get to. Did you want to go through the figures, the latest figures?
Or are you like feeling uneasy because I've broken with the usual
I'm
script?
Like, wait, this is not right. No. We can go straight into the press if you want.
No. Tradition's important, Serena. Tradition's important. People need to know where they stand in the morning. They like routine.
Yes, exactly.
Let's start with the numbers.
Okay, so this time last week, we were looking at figures of 1,096. Over the last few days, we've had 1,210, 1,209. Yesterday, they announced new figures, 1,255 new cases of COVID-19 in the UAE. So that's after more than 105,000 tests were conducted across the country. So looking at the total reported figure, it's 152,809 currently, out of which 7,624 cases are active. You had four fatalities yesterday. So we've got 538 deaths total, 715 recoveries. So we're at 144,647 recoveries total. And just doing a global tally for you, cases, more than 55.9 million reported cases internationally, out of which more than 15.6 million are active, and more than 1.3 million people have died internationally.
Right. Let's talk about what came out of the press. And I know that there was a huge focus, and I've seen it in the headlines this morning, on what National Day means this year. But before we get to our National Day, our neighbours are having a socially distanced, completely responsible party.
Yes, that's right. Oman is celebrating their 50th National Day today. And in light of that, more details have been announced when it comes to the recent guidelines that have been introduced for Omani citizens planning to travel to the UAE through the land border crossings, because obviously that was implemented from the 16th. NSEMA have had a lot of inquiries, and so they wanted to address them last night. So what is new? Omani citizens will need to take PCR tests on the 4th, 8th and 12th day of their visit in the UAE.
Wow.
Each visitor is also required to sign a pledge at the border, which the head of the family can sign on behalf of all the family, so long as they're all first degree relatives. Anyone over the age of 18 can sign on behalf of a second degree relative who is below the age of 18, if that makes sense. NSEMA has also advised elderly people and those suffering with chronic conditions, please not to travel. That is the advice. They've also advised sterilizing or disinfecting your luggage before traveling as well. What has not changed is that, of course, you need that negative PCR test result that is from an accredited Omani lab, and it should be valid no more. It shouldn't exceed more than 48 hours validity. There's a list of accredited laboratories in Oman that is constantly being updated, and that is available with the General Authority for Security, Ports, Borders and Free Zones, because it's provided by the Ministry of Health and Prevention. You were tested again upon entry at the border. The update here is that is a DPI laser test. So that is the finger prick blood test. If that comes back positive, you need to take the PCR test and then return back to Oman and wait for your test results to come in. You need to download the Al Hosn app. That hasn't changed. And Omani visitors who travel to Abu Dhabi from another emirate, they must state at the border into the capital. All of their travel details and local protocols will be applied.
Okay, so let's talk about what that means for us for National Day. I was down on Kite Beach last night getting my steps up with Helen Farmer, 92, watch out, we're on you. And the flags are out for National Day. There is the massive, there's a sea of flags. I'll call it a sea of flags. It's on the beach. Mm. I don't know how many of them there are. I suspect that there is a specific number. They are in formation. But we have new rules this year, don't we, for National
That's
Day?
That's right. The National Emergency Crisis and Disaster Management Authority, they were speaking at last night's presser. They've released a list of guidelines as people gear up for National Day. And it also, they distinctly used the words National Day, Christmas and New Year celebrations. They referred to all three. So they're calling on everyone to follow precautionary health measures that are in place for all activities. Concerts can be held, but you must receive approval from the relevant authorities first and implement relevant safety measures. Workplace celebrations are cancelled. Literally, you are restricted to, you can hang decorations, flags, banners only, while gatherings to watch shows such as fireworks are not permitted. They've said that official rules for holding celebrations cover five basic areas: public health, physical distancing, regulations and policies, digital technology, sterilization and cleaning. So on the topic of public health, they've stressed and reiterated need to wear masks, carry out necessary temperature checks, adhere to personal hygiene, train your workers at recreational venues so they're up to date with all those guidelines, and apply preventative measures when serving food and beverages. For physical distancing, of course, that 2 meters between people. They also mention private parties and gatherings are not allowed. Areas for the isolation of sick individuals must be provided, and entry and exit routes at all facilities should be clearly marked using posters. The rules stress the need for everyone to follow existing safety measures, not to hold gatherings or marches. They prohibit the circulation, distribution, exchange of celebratory gifts and food, and call for an appointment of a person to monitor and enforce all health and safety measures. That would probably be. So, for example, when you're considering malls, National Day, you would usually see parades through the mall, entertainment, or the new guidelines state, please don't do that. So virtual celebrations are being recommended. And if you recall, last month we recently had UAE leaders attending virtual weddings. So meanwhile, people are advised to make reservations for approved events lasting no more than 3 to 4 hours. Yes, Tom.
Sorry, I haven't been listening, but I
love it.
But no, I mean, I was listening,
yes.
But then there was a little phrase you said there. I haven't been listening to the details. I haven't listened to the finer points. But the phrase you said there, you can't have a party.
Okay.
Because, but hang on, whoa.
Yeah.
Because we've been telling everyone you can have a party.
No, okay. So the idea is...
So can I have a party or not?
No, the way that the information has been expressed, we're talking about... We're not just referring to your house, we're referring to all venues.
Mm.
So restaurants need to look at these regulations, malls, because it's not just the idea of you holding a party at home. You've got restaurants maybe that they would have some entertainment... Or like I was mentioning with malls, like you'd have parades and
people
playing music and stuff during National Day. You're not going to see that this year. So these measures are being implemented. Like, let's go back to the case figures. Yeah. Active cases currently, you've got 7,624. Whereas back in November 4th, we were down at 1,822.
Yeah.
These measures are being implemented because, yes, you've got celebrations and everything coming up, but you need to do it carefully and sensibly. So,
don't you love it when she tells them off?
I do. Absolutely love it.
Anyway, so the idea is, that if we, like, look at all... Can I... You can go to the cinema here. If you went abroad now, which you can't go to the cinema anywhere else. We're able to do things here that not many other countries can. So they're trying to implement these guidelines, and it's like, okay, let's bite the bullet on this one. Let's just take this one. So don't have 30 people round to your house, supposedly. Go to a place that is monitored, has disinfection procedures, and is inspected and is kept safe. Go to they're not telling you can't see your friends and family, or but they're telling you, please do it in a safe environment and follow the guidelines.
That's you
question.
Told.
We've run out of time, but here's a question for you to think about. Ah, Serena, does this mean I can go to a concert full of people I don't know and rub shoulders with them, but can't have a few friends in my house for Christmas Day? Bar humbug, Ebenezer.
The concerts are going to be implemented under the safety guidelines. So obviously they need to apply for permission, and then all things to do with capacity and temperature checking, that will all be implemented. But yeah, I'm just the messenger.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much.
You're welcome. More on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right then, talking aviation now, because earlier on this morning, our producer Mohammed made me get up at the well before the crack of dawn to do a Zoom call with one of the senior guys at Boeing, who's in Seattle on the west coast of the United States. Darren Hulst, Vice President of Commercial Marketing for Boeing. We'll hear from him in a second. First up, though, just to set the scene, someone else who's based in Seattle. I wasn't speaking to him this morning. He was speaking to CNBC. He is Bill Gates, and he's also been talking about aviation, and I disagree with him. He says, and you'll hear from him now, that he thinks even post-pandemic, business travel is only going to be a fraction of what it was in 2019. Have a listen to Bill Gates.
Well, my prediction would be that over 50% of business travel and over 30% of days in the office will go away. That now that it's not the gold standard that, yes, you flew all the way here to sit in front of me, that you can do the virtual connection, that it will be a very high threshold for actually doing that business trip, and that there will be ways that you can work from home a lot of the time.
Well, you'd have thought that that would be bad news for the aviation industry if we're only going to have 50% of the business travel or less that we had previously. However, the guys at Boeing are bullish. Here's the thing. They've just released their 2020 commercial market outlook, their 20-year forecast for sales of aircraft. Not just their aircraft, but aircraft in general. And that's what I was speaking to Darren Hulst about. And they're bullish. It's one of our top stories this morning that the Middle East commercial fleet is expected to reach 3,500 by 2039, and that would more than double the current 1,510 aircraft. And I said to Darren, how, when we're chatting in the midst of the pandemic, aviation's been decimated over the past few months, how can you have such a bullish long-term forecast? And this is what he told me.
I think the thinking is, in times like these, we need to remember the perspective around the value that commercial aviation brings. And so while we absolutely are facing the biggest challenge in commercial aviation history, the fundamentals, the demand for air travel and what air travel means to the global transportation system, that's not changing in the long term. And so from our perspective, we'll see a year or two of lost growth in the market. But fundamentally, when the market comes back, it'll come back quickly. And then when it does, that's when we'll resume the growth trends that we've seen throughout the last 40 and 50 years in aviation.
So those are two fundamentally different worldviews, guys. And what do you think about this? Tom, you as well. Bill Gates says, post-pandemic, we're only going to have 50% of the business travel we did before because companies aren't going to sign off on it when you can do a Zoom call for a fraction of the cost. But what Darren says is that it's fundamentally not changing in the long term. Which camp are we in? I'm probably more in Darren's camp, to be honest. I think we will go back to business travel.
I think Darren has to say that, doesn't he?
Of course he has to say it, yeah.
I think Darren wants to believe that. Because otherwise Darren might be going looking for employment elsewhere. Of course he wants to believe it. He believes in his brand. He believes in the industry, etc.
But the argument is, and it's just been made by CK, so does Bill Gates. He's in tech.
Yeah, he's in tech. But I think the problem is human emotion at the moment. And technology has proven that you don't need to travel to New York to get a contract signed. It's been proved over the last 9 months, 10 months.
I know people who are already doing it, though.
Yeah, of course they are. And people are chomping the bit, but they won't do it on the scale that companies were doing it. So I think it will take a long, long time for the bounce back to come back.
Well, the bounce back is likely to be for short and medium haul rather than long haul. That is what a lot of people are saying, which is why you've got more demand for single aisle planes here in the Middle East, the Boeing 737s and the Airbus A320s. And again, I was joking with Darren saying, I've been here 22 years. For the first 15 years of my life, I don't think I got on a single aisle plane. Barely. Even if you're going to a 30-minute trip to Bahrain, you'd be on this gorgeous, huge 777 or A330 or something, wouldn't you? But anyway, he said the real growth in demand is for these single-aisle planes being flown by the likes of Fly Dubai, Air Arabia, and many, many others as well. This is Darren.
You know, one thing that we've seen around the world is airlines continue to find ways to be more productive, more efficient, and, appeal to passengers with demands on frequency and destinations. And so single-aisle aircraft in the Middle East, amazingly, over the last 10 years, have seen really at least double, in some cases, triple or quadruple the amount of capacity in those short and medium haul sectors to places like Africa, the subcontinent in India, even Central Asia and parts of Europe. And I think the single aisle market helps enable more connectivity to smaller and medium sized markets while providing airlines a whole lot more efficiency in terms of the cost, but also in terms of their flexibility to deploy to plenty of opportunities.
And of course, you can't talk about single-aisled aircraft with Boeing without talking about the 737 MAX, which has been grounded for nearly 2 years now. I was looking at comments from the CEO, Dave Calhoun, a couple of weeks ago. He said, we are very close to the finish line. American Airlines seems to agree. They say they hope to get the 737 MAX back in the air by Christmas this year. This is what Darren told me about the latest on the 737 MAX.
So from our perspective, again, we're following the leads of the regulatory agencies around the world, from the FAA to EASA and elsewhere, and we're working really closely with them, making sure that we check all the boxes and we manage all the requirements, as well as working very closely with our customers on return to service plans and how training and how all the other aspects of returning the aircraft to service will occur once the ungrounding order is made.
I asked him about the future of these big Middle East super hubs for aviation. We've got two of them here in the UAE, haven't we? Dubai, to a lesser extent Abu Dhabi, but to some extent they are east to west, north to south connector hubs. And I asked him, post-pandemic, is that model broken? Are we never going to go back to these super connector hubs? And he said, no, not at all. He thinks that the Middle East super connector hub, Dubai, of course, being the preeminent one, that model is intact.
I think it's absolutely intact. Honestly, point-to-point travel is always the most efficient, and everybody wants to minimize the number of stops they have. On the other hand, It's very, very effective. And it's been proven time and time again that collecting traffic through a hub and efficiently distributing and building, you know, what it takes to fill aircraft for medium and long haul flights is incredibly efficient and effective, and creates new opportunities to serve routes that don't have the demand to be served point to point. And I think that's the beauty of the Middle East, the Gulf business models. And I mean, as I said before, within an 8-hour flight is 80% of the global population, 70% of the global economy, and in probably the fastest growing parts of the global economy. And so I think that hub system is going to be in place for as long as we can imagine.
Finally, I asked him about the Boeing Airbus near duopoly on commercial aircraft. We've got pretenders, rivals like the COMAC C919 out of China. Could they break the duopoly?
Well, if it is a duopoly, it's one of the most competitive ones that I can think of, because each campaign, each customer, each airline that we work with, we want to compete for their business, because we realize how important it is to manage our growth, the opportunity in the marketplace, and really serve them with the right products and services and create those solutions. I would say, you know, from my perspective, the one thing that we're focused on is making sure that we've got the right products for the market today and into the future. And as I mentioned, you know, airlines are increasingly focused on versatility. And so we're looking at our current portfolio, our current product line, to make sure that fits our customers' needs. And if it doesn't, what else we can do to help provide the solution. So I think it just sharpens the competitive edge, you know, in the near term as we look to supporting our customers.
That's Darren Hulst, Vice President, Commercial Marketing at Boeing, speaking to me this morning.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Do you think that we will all get back in the air, that we will all get back to business travel? And I would argue that Dubai has a higher percentage of business travel than your average non-expat country. We certainly know from a new survey that's come out from Inmarsat that we've also been discussing this morning, that we are more comfortable getting back into the air than many other countries. Let me give you the figures. 46% of us have already taken a flight during the pandemic. The global average is 34%, according to this survey. You've been getting in touch with us to tell us from your business's point of view what's likely to happen. And I have to say, overwhelmingly, people think that they will be flying. This is Johan. If I decide to stick to Zoom meetings when my competitors do face-to-face meetings, I'll go out of business. This means while everyone else does Zoom meetings, fine, I'll get business with Zoom meetings. But if some of my competitors start travelling again, I will follow suit immediately and the old world will be back. Sarah's been in touch. She has said something similar. She has basically said, we have had countless contracts that are not signed and deals that are not sealed simply because Zoom calls are not enough. And Tian has a very interesting take on it. Tian getting in touch with us to say, for those of us who are 40 years old plus, we will start in a year or two to fall back into old habits. We will meet face to face. Under 40s will continue to strike deals and sign contracts over Zoom meetings.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? We've got a Twitter poll. What do you think? Will business travel bounce back? 75% say yes, 25% say no. I voted yes. I think it will bounce back.
I haven't voted yet, probably should, but I'm a yes. I think it's too ingrained in us, and it's almost part of what you sign up for when you go and work as an expat, is that international travel and that kind of lifestyle. And if you don't have that, if you're sitting in the same country month in, month out, does that still become as attractive for you as a life and work destination? Tom, what do you think?
I'm not convinced. I think anybody would like to travel, but I'm just, I didn't travel a huge amount, but certainly have a number of friends who were traveling all the time. They're not at the moment. And their argument to me is, look, you know, if it was my business or I own the business or I was an entrepreneur or whatever and I had to travel, then I would travel. I wouldn't have a problem. But because a lot of them are working for large corporates and large internationals and their policies have changed fundamentally, and their policy is we're not comfortable with you traveling for the foreseeable. And this is not something, this is obviously something that has been prompted by COVID-19, but they're also saying that they're seeing extraordinary results. I have seen extraordinary results this year in the midst of the pandemic, which has made a lot of their companies turn around and go, okay, we don't need to travel as much as we used to. We just don't need to, because the cost of A, the travel, B, the lodging, the hotels, the expenses, the expense account being smashed left, right and centre for expensive lunches at Zoomers left, right and centre. So it was, yeah, I'm not sitting here saying no one will get onto a business flight. No, of course, I think it will happen. But certainly not on the scale that it was.
I don't know, because I know people at the moment who are already travelling, where quite frankly, it is difficult. People who have had to take 3 flights to get into a country rather than 1. People who, you know, are doing multiple tests in, multiple tests out, a bit of time quarantining at one end, a bit of time, you know, a couple of days till you get the results. So we're not talking weeks, we're talking 2 days until, you know, you've got your swab up the nose at the airport, you're at home, you're waiting, and then your Al-Hosanep updates and you get the nice little text message from authorities telling you, because someone's just sent me one to show me from the airport run that they did a couple of days ago, coming back in from a business trip, which says, yes, you're negative, and then finishes with, please stay safe and healthy, which is cheerful. But people are doing it, and they are paying for it, and they are putting up with the inconvenience,
but not on the scale. That's a couple of people. It's not on the scale that it was. And you know, the fact that A380 has been grounded, the A380 problem was not a COVID problem. It was a problem before, and that was that. You know, that the whole idea of that was we just haven't got the numbers. We can't fill these things. You know, so we've got an entire deck of business travellers that was incompatible with the trends that we're moving forward. Carbon footprints, pressures on, climate change, etc. It's a changing world. It's COVID is just, it has fast forwarded that change, I think.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And it's the time of the morning when we sit down with Shruti Rajendran and we go through the papers. And I must say, I thoroughly approve of her first pick, soundtrack of my childhood.
Jolene, 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 Jolene.
Why Dolly?
Well, Dolly has apparently, she's not just a singer-songwriter, she's apparently even the saviour when it comes to coronavirus.
Didn't see that one coming.
Excellent.
So in April, Dolly Parton contributed about $1 million to a coronavirus research at Vanderbilt University. And now they're saying that that research is the one that helped produce the Moderna vaccine. The news that came out yesterday, which says that, you know, this vaccine is 94.5% effective at preventing COVID-19. So Dolly Parton is single-handedly saving corona. What have you done for the world?
It's a fair point. It's a fair question. So is Dolly going to make a fortune out of this? Has she got shares in this? Or was it a donation? Or was it an investment? What do we know? With the business breakfast, we got to ask the cash question.
It was a donation. So okay. She is friends with the man behind the research, that is Dr. Naji Abumrad. They've been friends since 2014. They met because the doctor treated her when she had a minor accident. So they've been friends since then, and she heard promising things about the research that he was doing. So she decided to donate, and she even encouraged people to donate in her Instagram post. This is ages ago. And now this is the research that contributed to the Moderna vaccine, and Dolly Parton is saving the world.
Congratulations, Dolly. Take a bow. She's only 74 years old. She's still got plenty of miles on the clock left.
That's why she's interested in getting rid of coronavirus.
Exactly, yes.
I love Dolly. Right, Richard, what can you do for me?
I have got the Times of India open this morning. Here's the headline. Prime Minister Modi speaks to US President-elect Joe Biden and congratulates him for his win. This is Prime Minister Narendra Modi of India. Had his first phone conversation with the US President-elect Joe Biden on Tuesday night, so overnight, setting the immediate priorities for the India-US relationship under the new president. Narendra Modi tweeted, he said, spoke to US President-elect at Joe Biden on the phone to congratulate him. We reiterated our firm commitment to Indo-US strategic partnership, blah, 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 blah. But Shruti, if I can bring you in here, that's quite significant. You know, the world's biggest democracy, the prime minister is congratulating Joe Biden as president-elect.
Yes, especially seeing how close he was to President Donald Trump.
Absolutely. I mean, Trump threw a rally for him in Texas, the Howdy Modi rally.
Yes. And as we know, he went on a tour of the US and President Trump was very supportive. And of course, President Trump also coming to India and, you know, speaking, seeing things there in Hindi.
And I was looking at the dates of it. President Trump was in India on an official state visit 25th to the 27th of February this year.
Mm.
Must have been one of, if not his last official engagements. Just seems extraordinary, doesn't it? Because we were getting very close to the teeth of it. I mean, by the second week of March, you know, the world was entering lockdown.
Yes.
Late February, Trump was still going on visits. It's not a criticism of him. You know, the world changed very quickly at that time. But yeah, late February to early March, wow, the world changed.
Yes, so it is surprising to see that Prime Minister Modi has come out and supported Joe Biden, and, you know, especially with everything that's going on with the elections and President Trump not conceding the election yet. So yeah, change of friendship, I suppose.
The other thing that struck me about this, and I'm looking on the Times of India website this morning, reading the story, it's very detailed, is I was surprised to see that basically Narendra Modi has turned into David Letterman with a big, long, bushy beard.
Oh, yes.
So David Letterman, the US late-night talk show host from many years ago, has reinvented himself as an interviewer. He's now late 60s, early 70s, but he's got this huge, long, grey Santa Claus beard. And some people like him, some people don't. I actually do quite like him, but whatever. But Modi's grown his beard. And he used to have a short cropped beard that looked quite distinguished, and that's fine. But I'm looking at him now. His beard is probably 6 inches long, 15 centimetres. He's looking older.
It's been a big COVID beard trend, though.
Yeah, my mum has a theory. She says that because he's in Delhi, which is, you know, one of the tightest lockdowns in India, and she thinks that maybe he cannot go visit a barber.
Oh, come on. If anyone could get a bit of a sneaky beard trim.
But can you imagine the press, though? People will go crazy if he breaks lockdown.
Look, if he needs, I will go on Flipkart today, the Indian e-commerce site, and buy him a beard trimmer.
Who does it himself? It's Modi. He's not going to do it himself.
He could do
it,
but someone needs to. Because
he'll have a team around him, surely, who are quarantining and all the rest of it, testing and quarantining, and there'll be someone who can trim a beard.
An in-house barber.
Yes.
Something like that.
In-house barber.
Narendra, I think your beard's too long. I think you need to trim.
Oh.
With love. Brandy, you're...
He doesn't start listening till 7:30, you'll miss that.
Your international pick of the papers.
Right, I am going to totally indulge myself. I'm going to look towards New Zealand, for I have been reading about New Zealand this morning, and I would like to tell you how we have solved our recycling problem in one of our southern cities.
Okay, how did you solve your recycling problem in one of your southern cities?
Apparently New Zealand has very low recycling rates compared internationally, which surprises me, because where I used to live in Wellington, if you don't recycle, you're pretty much shot on your front doorstep. I mean, people recycle. It is taken extremely seriously. Not only do they recycle, they wash out their their yogurt pots until they are pristine. And not only do you have, like, recyclables and non-recyclables, but you have different bins and you have different coloured bags, and that, do you know what I mean? There are different grades of plastic. We know the grades of plastic, but that is Wellington, and that is a very left-leaning, civil servicey, people knit shoes out of possum hair type of city. Christchurch, on the other hand, not so. They had a problem, which was that people were throwing out all their recycling during coronavirus, and people were not basically doing it properly. So only 48% of recycling trucks could actually head to the sorting facilities to recycle stuff. 50% of it had to just end up in the landfill because people hadn't sorted it, hadn't washed it, hadn't done it properly. They don't really know why this happened during the sort of the lockdown and post-lockdown and coronavirus. Maybe it's people thought we're doomed anyway. Who would know?
Just a bit of social context. If Wellington is, and it's the political capital, isn't it, quite left-leaning, is Christchurch more Hicksville? Would it be more kind of hashtag MAGA?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I would not have necessarily thought so. But Christchurch is a beautiful city, and it's had its issues, obviously, post-earthquake and shooting as well. But what the council has done is they decided to give people gold stars. Remember school? If you did well? So they have been sticking gold stars on your wheelie bin if you recycle correctly. The rate of trucks that can go to the recycling facility, because everything's been done, has gone from 49% to 80%.
Oh, you are having a laugh.
People are contacting them to say, how do I get one of those stickers?
On the plastic wheelie bin.
So that your neighbours can see Richard's a good recycler.
This is the new status symbol. It's not about having a Ferrari in the driveway.
No.
You want a gold sticker
You've
on
got
your
a
wheelie
gold
bin.
Gold star on your wheelie bin. It is working. It is absolutely working. Out of the, they've got 26% of people have received a gold star for recycling.
Wow.
Like I said, it is improving the rate of recycling that can be done. Go New Zealand.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's talk about money, but let's not talk about six or seven figure restaurant bills. Let's go down the other end of the scale with that. Here in the UAE, the central bank has extended the economic stimulus package, the Targeted Economic Support Scheme, or TESS, that has been getting liquidity through the banking system since March. We are going to have a look now at what the extension actually means. It's being extended until next June. We are joined on the line by a leading bank CEO, the CEO of Rackbank, Peter England. Peter, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Brandy.
Do you want to remind us what TESS was originally set up to do?
Yeah, so actually, Brandy, TESS was set up to do two things, really. The banking system went through a very difficult liquidity challenge, you know, in March when COVID hit. And so firstly, it was to pump liquidity into the system. And the second thing was to provide interest rate relief. So the whole idea was really to allow banks to provide installment relief to their clients and effectively give banks zero cost funding to do that. So it wouldn't have such a big impact on the bank and most importantly, allowed banks to defer repayments for clients during these difficult times.
How's it been working so far?
Oh, look, exceptionally well. I mean, I think, the entire $50 billion was utilised relatively quickly. In Rackbank's case, for example, we utilised our full $1.3 billion that we were given in a very short space of time. And keep in mind that the amounts we're talking about here are just the deferred amounts. They're not the actual the loans themselves that have been deferred. So, you know, that $50 billion, there might have been $200-300 billion worth of loans that actually where clients could get deferrals on their installments.
When you say the money went or the ability to defer went fairly quickly at Rackbank, who benefited from that?
Yeah, like in our case, it was mainly our SME clients and our personal banking clients. About 50% of our SME clients availed some form of relief. And initially, about 40% of our individual clients with personal loans and so forth. What we found, particularly on the personal banking front, is now people's salaries are returning more to normal. Perhaps they're starting to get commissions and so forth again. So there's less of a need on the personal banking front. The business banking side, we still have clients needing assistance with repayments at this time.
Were there any clear trends, particularly I'm interested on the small and medium business front, as to who needed the assistance?
No, it's an interesting one, actually. I mean, I think it's because our portfolio particularly is very, very small, more the sort of S of the SME side, I guess. And look, you know, we didn't see anything particularly widespread. You know, we have a very well-diversified base, and it was a combination. I mean, some of our clients have told us that actually during COVID times they've been doing exceptionally well. So, yeah, I couldn't point to one particular thing. I mean, to be fair, we don't have a huge amount of exposure in hospitality and tourism. So I would assume that would be the biggest challenge during this time.
But what were people mainly after? Were they looking to sort of kick the can down the road, or is it more than that?
No, look, I think, well, yes, particularly in the case of businesses, if you think about it, during the crisis or during the peak of the crisis, for want of a better word, you know, businesses were able to, for example, you know, get rent reductions. They were able to sort of temporarily lower staff salaries and so forth. So it really was, the idea was that people could just get that relief during the most difficult time. And then as things start to recover, begin to pay under renegotiated terms, for sure. I mean, that most people will still need some sort of restructured loan or some type of thing to get them back on their feet.
That's my question, actually. What do you think your customers' needs are going to be, I'm hesitant to say post-pandemic, but going into 2021?
Yeah, I think in most cases, I mean, I think on the individual front, for example, when not seeing a great need for extended relief, for the business customers, we do think, you know, for example, if they had a four-year loan, we may need to restructure that into some sort of 5 or 6 year loan structure to allow them to make lower repayments for that period. So it'll be different, obviously, for different customers, and particularly on the SME side, we literally do it customer by customer. There's no sort of portfolio approach to that.
How much leeway, how much autonomy do banks like RackBank have when it comes to deciding who benefits from the scheme, who qualifies?
Well, I think there were certain things. I mean, when it came to individuals, we set our own criteria in terms of, you know, how much salary reduction would someone need to have before they could avail of this scheme. But in terms of the central bank, no, it was very, very open. I mean, basically the intention was to make sure that banks just provided this facility to clients, and it was up to the banks themselves to determine, you know, which clients could be eligible and which ones wouldn't, and what the nature of that relief is.
So now we've got the scheme extended until the end of June. So effectively, if you like, extended until July. Did it need to be?
Yeah, look, I think it was. It really was that, you know, because of this relatively large injection of liquidity into the system, it needs to be sort of phased out. So I think the June timeframe is to give everyone time to adjust to those changes. Some of the other changes that Central Bank made in terms of capital buffers and various other things, they actually have been extended till the end of next year. So they've got another 6 months after that. So it's really a gradual phasing out sort of process that's being adopted.
And what do you expect to see under that extension? What do you expect to see in terms of requests from your clients? Less than you saw in the last sort of 6 months?
Yeah, I think absolutely. As I said sort of earlier, on the individual side, we're seeing most people now are starting to be able to make their repayments again. On the SME front, a little bit of a mixed bag, but I think generally, yes, there's absolutely less requests, and we're now starting to see, you know, clients wanting to borrow money again. We're starting to see some loan demand slowly coming back into the market. So, I think the utilization will be relatively limited. I think it's more about, in fact, I think the central bank really wants us to try to utilize that funding for new funding rather than for existing relief. Is the main intention from what I can see in the instructions that came with it.
And of course, it's also safety for banks as well, isn't it? Because everyone wants the banks to stay capitalised and stay liquid. And I imagine that you are keeping a very close eye at the moment on your balance sheet when it comes to bad loans.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, in our case, for example, you know, we just happen to be very strong in terms of capital and very strong in terms of liquidity. The bad loans is obviously a challenge for everyone. Though, to be fair, most of the provisions that banks have been taking relate to these IFRS 9 provisions, which are provisions for future losses rather than actual things that we're seeing now. So it's more a thought process about what might come in the future. I think liquidity and capital, at least for us, is fine. I think most of the banks are relatively strong in that front. But it's the most important thing about these is these sort of measures, as I said, if they're going to be removed, they need to be removed very gradually. And that's certainly what the central bank's doing here.
And Peter England is the CEO of RackBank. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Breakfast this morning.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.